Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Alexander Arnold. Salah! Oh, it's in! It's a new goal! Inside the 90th minute!
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling. JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
Well, I'm doing better than you anyway. That's
yeah,
for sure.
You sure are.
You are quite the wet blanket today.
I'm not going to fake it. I don't know what people...
Your response to the French gift I brought you this morning...
I actually did not see it.
Well, it's a croissant right here. And it's something French that won't let you down.
Yeah. Could use one of those. Thank you. That's very nice of you. I will eat that at some point.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Look, there's some voodoo down at that gold at the cop end, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, there really is. Of course, you referencing the Pickford error from earlier in the season against Everton. We will, of course, talk about the Caught Offside Cup at great length, I'm sure. Also, I do want to mention later in the podcast, we're going to talk with Louis Miles. He is a director of a documentary that just came out called Kaiser, the Greatest Footballer Never to Play Football. I was not even really aware of this documentary. You brought it to my attention.
I forced it onto the podcast.
Yeah, but it makes sense.
But like, it does make sense. It's something completely different. It is a story that only football could have. And it's about a guy who had a 26-year career at the top of Brazilian football and never kicked a ball. I don't know if it's fair to call him a con man.
More, yes, it is.
Is it really?
I mean, well, when people hear the story that Louis will tell, who has kind of documented it, if he's not a con man, then what is he? He literally conned his way onto one club after another without really having any ability to play the sport.
But top players that played alongside him, I say played, that trained with him.
That knew him
definitely were complicit in it. Because,
in some way.
But we'll save that for the interview.
Yeah, so that will be, obviously we'll do kind of all of our regular stuff on the podcast. Mailbag coming up. And then we'll talk with Louis at the end of the podcast. So if you're curious about that, make sure you stay tuned. Because it just actually debuted in the U.S. today.
On April Fool's Day.
Yeah, which seems oddly fitting. We will have a podcast midweek. I promise, because we really have the MLS is, let's be honest, it's been a rumor on this podcast so far.
But I'm watching games.
All right, but have we talked about them? It's been a rumor. And that's because the Premier League has been just like
enthralling,
insane the last few weeks. And then the U.S. had their friendlies last week. So I do promise that we're going to do our Jump to Conclusions week midweek.
And now I think about it, we're talking about a fake footballer on the podcast today rather than the actual footballers of Major League
Midweek
Soccer.
Will be our MLS Jump to Conclusions.
Because I watched some games at the weekend. I wedged them in between watching huge amounts of Brexit, the two-hour Alex Jones deposition.
Really?
Yep. And what else did I watch? I have it written down here. Basketball.
I was about to say, between baseball starting and March Madness, I was kind of hoping we could just talk college basketball today. Is that possible?
I would love to speak about Carson Edwards.
I have so many thoughts on him, on Mike Krzyzewski, and just his, like, for the legend that he is, I thought this was just like one of the worst coaching jobs I've ever seen him do.
Holy moly.
Yeah, that'll all just have to be for another day.
That'll be for the Caught Off the Backboard podcast.
I'll just go home and yell at Jack all my thoughts about college basketball.
It was super sweet, the message you sent me of your little boy on the sofa prior to the game, hopes and dreams in his eyes, saying in his little boy voice, "Come on, you Spurs." It was so lovely. And also
very little prodding.
No, very little prodding. And also fitting to have his dreams destroyed, although he napped during the game.
Yeah, so he didn't actually see any of it, really. I sent that message, and then Amanda came home, and he went up and took a nap.
Before we get into it, was just so... I hate these days where I can't text you freely because...
No, I wanted none of it.
On a Spurs match day, I'm not trying to troll you all the time. I'm genuinely not. Our good friend Tom Fitz is trying to troll
you. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but I'm not, because I don't want to upset our delicate equilibrium on this podcast.
Well, but you see, you have already, and I know that is genuine, but the Eagles text messages that you've sent me over the years, it's always just going to be in the back of my head.
I'm not
trying. I can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
those things happened.
I don't know. It's so bad that in the biggest, in the week where you had your biggest win on the podcast in some time.
What was that? What do you mean?
Oh, the rap battle.
Oh, the rap battle.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Like, I was like,
no, that was a huge win for Team Gundy.
Yeah, and I know, judging by what the score was, I can tell that people did not want to vote for me, but felt that they were left with no choice.
Good Lord, what is wrong with you?
What do you mean?
Take the W.
I'm taking the W, but I could tell. I was like, oh, wow, that was actually closer than I thought it was.
Sorry, some people were effusive in their praise.
Well, that's very
nice of them. We'll get to that later. Let's just talk about the game.
Yeah, here's what I will say before we even really dive into the game.
Okay.
This, today, right here and now, I'd say there have been two podcasts in all the years. We're coming up on our fifth anniversary later this month.
Yeah, at the end of the month.
Who would have ever thought, like, but at any rate, I'd say there have been two podcasts ever that we've done that I had zero interest in doing. This is one of them right now. Do you know what the other one is?
Oh, the U.S.
The U.S. after Trinidad.
Yeah.
I wanted to go home. I honestly didn't want to say a word.
Well,
after that.
Sat in silence for 25 minutes. It was almost 1 a.m. before we even pressed record.
I know.
That was
the other. But for some reason, I don't know why, this wasn't a cup final. Tottenham aren't challenging for a title. They're still in third. Like, their top four hopes are still alive. They're in the Champions League quarterfinals.
Moving into a new stadium.
On Wednesday, they play their first game. Like, I don't know. I can't really explain why some losses resonate in the ways that they do. But for whatever reason, just the way that game transpired, the kind of like ebbs and flows of the emotion that go along with it, the fact that before the game, I was probably already annoyed watching the Liverpool pep rally on NBCSN. NBCSN pregame show. all of those things combined, plus the fact that, look, you know, rivalries oftentimes, like, the reason Tottenham and Arsenal are such great rivals is because they both share a neighborhood in North London. I don't live in North London. Now, I respect the hell out of that rivalry, and I despise Arsenal because I respect that rivalry. But ultimately, like, my rival is you. Like, this is the rivalry for me.
Right,
like, you're the soccer fan that I deal with.
Right, okay.
And
you deal with,
and like this,
that I tolerate.
And this podcast oftentimes is Liverpool Weekly, because we have so many Liverpool fans that listen to this show through you, which is a testament to you and the power that you kind of have within that community. And so, you know, I get all those tweets from Liverpool fans.
Oh,
so this is the rivalry for me. So for all those things combined, it just equated out into a game that, for me personally, goes down as one of the worst losses that I can remember in my time as a fan.
Can I put meat on the bones here for you? Because I saw the teams and I saw the way they were lining up, and I'm one of those guys that I was in the Monroe bar first because I needed to be amongst my people. And I was openly speaking through the team, and I thought, Lucas Moura is going to cause us problems running in between the lines, running in behind the full back positions, which will be vacated because we will play high. All those things came to pass. I thought Tottenham started well, thought Liverpool grew into the game, and Liverpool were good value for the first half for their 1-0 win, or for their 1-0 being on top. But the second half was all Spurs, and I thought Pochettino dealt with Liverpool excellently and dominated that midfield. I thought this was as good a Spurs performance as we've seen in some time. Now, I can't put my finger on why Spurs haven't won since February 10th in the Premier League. I really can't. I don't understand what that is, because they have not been misfiring, apart from results. They have been playing well. I say that. There were games that they got through prior to February 10th where you're like, they probably should have lost that game.
No, but you're right. Like, go back to the Southampton game that they wound up losing. The first half, they could have been up 5-0.
Right, right. So I can't put my finger on it. But just on this game alone, I thought Spurs were very, very good. And if you're asking me if there was going to be a goalkeeper that was going to throw one into the net, so to speak, it would not have been Hugo Lloris. Now, I didn't think he was good. He certainly wasn't good in his kicking, I believe, up in the lead up to the first Liverpool goal. But Alisson had what I can only describe as a thoroughly disheartening performance. He was dreadful. There were so many times where he would have made unforced errors, or some of them were forced, but whatever. Things you expect a top goalkeeper to deal with. And I was more concerned about him than I was thinking of Lloris doing what he did. You should have come out with a point. It would have been acceptable. And you've got two moments in the game. You've got the Van Dijk header, which could have put Liverpool ahead again.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a miscue, and it ended up coming off, was it Bobby Firmino's legs, and Lloris grabbed it. And then you have Sissoko.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that should have been that. And it's amazing how the narrative will swing.
Yep.
You're coming out of that game. If Lloris does his business and catches the Salah header, imagining all those things happen afterwards. But if Sissoko scores, it's nigh on the perfect away performance for Spurs.
Now, look, ultimately, there's a reason why not only does Sissoko not score goals, I can probably count on one hand the number of shots that I've ever even seen him take. Like, he knows that it's just not a thing that he's capable of doing.
And he so did not want that on his
left foot. No, he was looking for every reason to play that ball off to Son, who was kind of running alongside of him
and
as that counterattack. And then, well, I'll give credit where credit is due.
Van Dijk. Yeah.
Virgil van Dijk, as he's backtracking, he knows, okay, like, now is the time for me to pick the best of the bad options. Yeah. And he's smart enough to recognize that, yeah. And he knows that Son is next to him, and he knows I've got a player in front of me right now who either, A, will take a heavy touch at the end of this and screw it up that way, which to Sissoko's credit, he did not do, or B,
well,
it's
I
a
mean,
guy
he
who
took the ultimate heavy touch.
Or B, it's a guy who just doesn't score goals. Like, he just doesn't, and he doesn't shoot, and it's not in his arsenal.
His left.
And Van Dijk said, okay, you know what? I am going to cover Son on this play, and I'm going to just give Sissoko this wide angle to shoot at, and if he does it, then so be it. But Van Dijk played it perfectly, and Sissoko had, unfortunately, a Sissoko of last year type moment. And, I mean, that was the one where, you know, I'm standing as that's developing, and when that shot goes up, you just kind of fall to your knees, and you're just like...
It's utterly deflating.
It really was. And, you know, I think that's part of, like, the bitterness of the Tottenham fan in this moment, is because part of it is that, like, we've just been gifted this opportunity.
Right.
Part of it is what you were talking about moments ago, this like this run that Spurs have been on where they're not playing poorly, but they're not winning games.
Right.
You know, go back to the Manchester United loss that they had 1-0. That's the game where David De Gea decides, okay, today I'm going to be the best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and then I look across the field to Liverpool, and I see this club that just keeps getting some of it through their own hard work. I don't mean to take it away from
lots
them,
of it.
But I think even the most ardent Liverpool fan would sit here and say that something is just transpiring this season where things are just breaking their way. So Sissoko fires on a one-on-one attempt with the keeper into row Z, and then we come back the other way, and Hugo Lloris drops a ball and bumbles it into his own center half, who kicks it into the net. Like the Pickford moment earlier this season. Spironi, the Crystal Palace, his moment against Liverpool, where he knocks a ball backwards into his own goal, so Salah's there
Sergio
to tap it in.
Sergio Rico.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Here,
I don't know what it is, but like things are breaking your way. Luck is part of the story. It is for every title-winning team.
You're absolutely right. That's the point that people should focus in on. All the title-winning teams need dollops of luck. Remember we used to play that Brian Clough drop where he was asked, oh, which would you prefer to win, the European Cup or win the league? In England, he goes, oh, the English League, you have to be a little bit silly, you have to be a little bit mad, a little bit daft, you have to have dollops of luck, all those things, and you absolutely do. But Liverpool, Andrew, don't stop playing. I can take you back to Liverpool teams of the past, that where current Rangers manager Steven Gerrard was captain of. And when things were going wrong, Gerrard would try to get himself on the ball in every scenario possible and try either worldy Hollywood passes or try and drill one into the top corner. Instead of maintain tempo, maintain shape, keep the ball, keep working the angles, get your full backs high. Liverpool have not stopped. That Salah header was tame. Lloris should have caught it.
Uh-huh.
But what's been overlooked is the genius of that ball from Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's clipped that and left it right on his head. How many times have we seen in the past where a cross like that is overhit or ballooned? He measured...
Yeah, like Van Dijk's against Everton earlier this season.
He measured that perfectly and left it right in Salah's head. Now, the rest was Lloris. I mean, Toby Alderweireld was so confident that Lloris would catch that, he did not even try and slow up. And so he ended up running straight into the ball.
Right.
He did not expect that ball to suddenly be at his
yeah.
feet.
Yeah, and look, I'm not trying to imply that luck is a knock against Liverpool, but like...
No, but it's been used as such. It's been used
as such.
You're
right, it has. But part of that is also because, you know, and I'm sure if we really wanted to, we could go back and parse through. But the team that Liverpool are contending with, Manchester City right now, like, I don't remember too many moments of just pure luck. And part of that, you know, part of the luck, obviously, what happened against Everton and Spurs is one thing. But another thing that I talk about is like, okay, let's even just look at the two games between Tottenham and Liverpool this season. Now, I'm not going to cry about the first game because Liverpool were better over the balance of that game.
Way better, yeah.
But in stoppage time, with Tottenham down by one goal, Son gets tripped in the box and no call is made.
Okay.
Then, you know, let's look at Liverpool in their last game against Fulham. Like, they get that call and they get a penalty to win that game where they were bad. Like, so, like, things like that are just... The calls are going Liverpool's way. The bounces, like the Pickford play, the Spironi play, the Lloris play, they're going Liverpool's way.
Do you know what? You are... I'm going to call you Warnock Gundling. This sounds like his press conference.
But, like,
you're not wrong, but that is the game. That is why we love it.
Not for everyone, though. Like, not for Tottenham. That's the game? No, it isn't.
Can I say something?
No, it isn't.
You know the way in... certainly in Judeo-Christian religions, we have prophecies. So X, Y, and a Z must happen to fulfill the prophecies.
Right.
So I'm watching Spurs yesterday. I'm watching the whole Sissoko miss, and I'm like, we're definitely going to win. And I'm wondering, in Lloris's head, is he so, to use that word, inculcated in the Spursy religion that he goes, I must fulfill the prophecy. And he drops that ball. It is accomplished.
I have to find this tweet. Hold on. Here, it's from the Men in Blazers Twitter account.
Okay.
Where they said, I get the feeling this game is going to be defined by a terrible, pathos-filled mistake. Bingo. Like, you nailed. Just totally nailed it. And, you know,
the ancient tablets prophesized this moment.
It's true.
A Frenchman. Svelte Frenchman will emerge.
I'm going to be super dramatic here and read a quote from one of my favorite. It's from the miniseries Band of Brothers.
Oh, that's fine.
And like, it's one of those things. As I'm watching the game yesterday, I'm just thinking about this in my head. It's 1-1. Lucas Moura has scored the equalizer, and the game's progressing. And I'm just watching. Like, I'm not even enjoying the game now because I'm just, like you said, the ancient prophecy must come true. Tottenham must find a way to lose this. And so the quote that keeps running through my head, remember in Band of Brothers, Lieutenant Spears, Ronald Spears?
Yes.
So he has this line in the episode that's all about dealing with fear.
Yeah.
And he has this line where he says to this one private, he says, the only hope you have is to accept the fact that you're already dead. The sooner you accept that, the sooner you'll be able to function as a soldier is supposed to function. And now I know that, like, what I'm talking about pales in comparison to what he's talking about. But when I'm watching Tottenham and it's 1-1 and I'm going through this, I'm thinking in my head, okay, they've scored. Like, we're losing now. I just need to know. I need to watch this game with that thought in my head that, like, they've already scored. I don't care what's actually happening. But like, once I know that we're going to lose this game, then I can function and just, like, kind of watch the game like a normal person.
Accept the things you cannot change. Just have the screensaver to your life be misery. And then you'll be surprised when things happen.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Can I read you something from Roy Smith on defining moments in a season? Because he's talking about how the Pickford and the Lloris mistakes will be framed. And he's going against that narrative, which is interesting and also kind of feeds a little bit into my Liverpool-centric narrative about luck. It is, though, a myth. Seasons are, by definition, collections of moments. Discerning which one is the one on which everything hinged, which one is more important than all the others, is an impossibility. He says that, like, you know, there's so many things happening, including, like, magic moments where great goals are scored that get washed away by, you know, Pickford pulling the ball from behind the crossbar and Lloris deciding that French existentialism and misery is more important than catching the ball.
Right. What is it Dwight Schrute says in The Office? Winners make their own luck. Billy Zane, Titanic.
Which is...
I get what he's saying, but some of this stuff is just like, give me a break.
I believe in Klopp, what Klopp says. This is the championship of the will. Which is a wonderful line.
I have no choice. I have to roll my eyes at that. It's like a natural reaction.
The championship of the will.
I roll.
I think it applies, though, because Man City's will is going to be tested, as is Liverpool's.
We're talking about Hugo Lloris a little bit, and I was reading something on the BBC from Jermaine Genus.
Jermaine Genus is on a Lloris hunt. He wants to run him.
He went on to say that this... He takes no joy in saying it as a former Tottenham man himself, and Hugo Lloris has been a a really great
servant
to the club, captain. Moments in his career when he was younger where he could have left, when Tottenham were finishing fifth, weren't qualifying for Champions Leagues. Tim Sherwood is there. Like, he could have left, and he chose always to stick it out, and he's seen he's reaped the rewards of that. And he's still relatively young. I think he's 32, which by goalkeeper standards, he's not very old.
He's in the sweet spot.
He's coming off a summer where he captained a World Cup winning side for France. But Jermaine Genus basically says, you can love him all you want for what he's meant to the club, but the results are the results, and he has become a liability for them. And he goes on to cite the fact that over the last 3 years, only one keeper has had more errors lead directly to goals. Oddly enough, that keeper is England's keeper, Jordan Pickford. He has 9. Lloris now has 8. It just feels like once a game, he's going to do something that you're going to yell at him. You're going to scream at your TV. Now, not all of them lead to goals, but it feels like it's happening way more and more. And Genus even says this Wednesday, when Tottenham open their new stadium, it should be Gazzaniga in net and not Hugo Lloris.
Well, the argument I'd make for Gazzaniga is Gazzaniga has been outstanding when he's played for Spurs. Really, really good. And I would argue that Gazzaniga might be better with his feet than Lloris is right now, which with the way the game's evolving is kind of important too. The stats are there, Andrew. His errors leading to goals. It's hard to ignore it anymore.
By the way, even French fans will tell you that. Remember his error against Sweden.
Yeah.
And remember, they won, but in the World Cup final against Croatia.
Still have one. I think it's important with him to do something, and I don't want to give him a latitude because we talk about Spurs a lot in this podcast. I don't want to seem overly sympathetic because you're sat across from me, but he's also had a lot of personal issues in this last year. Huge personal issues. And it's too simplistic to say that, oh, well, you know, he's a professional goalkeeper. What happened with the drink driving ban, what happened in that moment, that will have nothing, that won't impact his performances. You know, things, being arrested, you know, going to appear in front of a judge in a situation where he could have killed people. There could be post-traumatic stress disorder in any of those things. I'm not a psychologist, but I think people have been pretty unfeeling in that that never gets mentioned. It's not brought up enough how off the field things haven't been great for
him. Fair enough, although a couple things that I would say. Number one, I might agree with some of that if I felt like his performances were confined to the field just this year. I think this has been building for a couple seasons. And number two, there's something about him getting a DUI and then turning him into some kind of sympathetic figure because of that just doesn't sit right with me.
I'm not trying to, but we're all human beings. I'm trying to talk about the impact that may have had on him. By the way, the Neanderthals are going to come rushing into this, and they're going to tell me about, you know, Bobby Firmino had similar, you know, conviction as well.
We all got problems.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there is some truth to that.
I'm just trying.
Hugo Lloris, you're right. He had an incident in his life that was probably traumatic for him, but he was at fault in it, and he's not alone. A lot of people have dealt with stuff that's probably even worse than that. So I don't know if I can give that to him. A couple guys I wanted to mention from this game, the positives. Andy Robertson, it was sensational. I thought not even just the ball that he played into Firmino for the goal, but just the havoc that he was wreaking down that side throughout the game, even getting back in defense. He's tremendous in attack, but he defends just as well.
He defines
he's man of the match.
He defines that kind of wingback position better than any player I know right now in the game. He's really, really good at it.
Yeah. On the Tottenham side, even though the moments may have been few and far between, the goal that Spurs scored and maybe a couple other moments as well go to show why Harry Kane is, he's just so the complete striker in this game, in that he's not just a great goal scorer, he's not just a great finisher, he's one of the more underrated passers, I think, that we have in the league. And the ball that he played in off the foul. Yeah, I mean, right to Trippier's foot. It was...
And the presence of mind to do it quickly.
Yeah.
Now, Liverpool fans were howling. Two things made them howl, I can tell you. One was that the ball was still rotating when he hit it. I'm not so sure that it wouldn't have stopped anyway. Do you know what I mean? Had he not hit it, it wasn't going to stop. The referee's right there. You know, the referee can easily... The referee was fine with that. And he's pinged it absolutely perfectly. The second one is, and it caused a little bit of a debate, the phone call. Poch was...
It's happened now in both of the games.
You're not supposed to do that. I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do that.
You shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, it would make sense for that to be against the rules. Like, you're not supposed to be impacting the game. This is your punishment.
Yeah, we were making jokes that maybe he was ordering the duck fried rice.
I suppose that will be his defense. But he did that, like, both games. It caught him.
It was brazen, though. Yeah. A big, massive iPhone on the sideline. And fair play to the director of the TV director who picked it up.
But, yeah.
I mean, it was pretty brazen.
Yeah. I wonder if that is actually against the rules. Would they extend his ban?
I think the idea of communicating in the game right. when you're not.
No, you're,
I don't think that's allowed.
You're right. It shouldn't be. But he was doing it. And it's funny because he makes that call, Sun comes in, and they score immediately. Like, it did impact things.
It's not Mourinho in the laundry basket going into the locker room when he was banned for Chelsea.
Right. Or Bobby Valentine coming back into the Mets dugout with the Groucho Marx glasses. That happened.
Yeah. Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah. I don't know, man. That's about all I have on this game. That's actually more than I thought I was going to offer. I really thought I was going to sit here quietly and just say, okay, here, have fun with it, and you talk.
Allow me to go inside, caught offside with this one. Your face when I saw you outside the door of the studio today.
Yeah, I'm telling
you. You're not over this.
No, I don't know what it was about that game. Oh, it really, truly affected me.
I'm with you. By the way, people wanted me to romp in here, you know, like, and be just the smuggest JJ. You know when I'm super smug. And I haven't been that way. I'm quite proud of myself.
Well, here's the only thing that, like, well, I guess by and large it is true that over the course of this show, Liverpool have dominated Tottenham in the head-to-heads.
Yeah.
But Spurs have, you know, but like in those years, you've had eighth place finishes.
Sure.
Like, Liverpool have not been great. Like, you know, Tottenham had the 4-0 against Liverpool. And I think typically you and I typically are gracious with one another.
I think people don't want me to. They want me to come in. I swear to God, get up in front of you and like crotch dance in your face. Like that kind of level.
Look, you won the game. If you want to do that, who am I to stop you?
I don't really want to.
But just like we always say when we see things like that happen in games, like when, you know, who was it for Chelsea that like pumped his fist in front of Mourinho's face? That's a bad example because Mourinho's gone now, so Chelsea did get the last laugh. But like it all gets remembered. If people want to do those things, like that's fine, but you're not going to win every single time. So just be prepared for it to come back.
It's going on the laminated list.
It certainly does. There were other games that happened over the weekend.
Yeah, I feel like it's a whole... I've watched so much sport this weekend. It's a real mush in my brain, all the things that happened.
Yeah, the other one that's most fresh in my mind, because it made me, well, not almost as angry, but also made me furious, was right before Tottenham and Liverpool, Chelsea, Cardiff. I was just like, are you... Like, I felt like Neil Warnock, when he had his hand on his hips at the center circle,
which was
staring daggers into the official's eyes and the linesman, I felt like we were all living vicariously through him in that moment.
We were
all Neil Warnock in that moment.
Yeah.
Chelsea fans aside, obviously.
Yeah, and he goes, I was trying to, you know, clap fans at end of ground, but, you know, the referee was still there, you know.
See, I took that as...
He wasn't. He was staring him out.
The fans were booing without mercy as the official stood there, which is their right. And Warnock walks out and he starts like cheering. I thought he was applauding the fans for booing the officials.
I would believe our fans were fantastic. Yeah, they were, Neil. And you enjoyed orchestrating them against the refs at the end. Absolutely.
He had every right to do that. We talked with Craig Burley last week.
Hey.
And I asked Craig, remember on that podcast, I asked him, what are you most intrigued by? The title race, the top four race, the relegation. I thought he was going to go right to the title race because it's Liverpool City and it's been so compelling. And he said, there's something about relegation. There's just something about relegation. And it's true, man. Like these calls that get made, what is that going to cost Cardiff if they wind up going down? Like this could be their future as a club. You don't know.
If we look at the way things have gone at Swansea, at Aston Villa, you're absolutely right. What's interesting to me though as well is the enduring sense of injustice that Neil Warnock has during his time in the Premier League. You go back 2006, 2007, I believe. So 12 years ago now when he was manager of Sheffield United. And it was Carlos Tevez's goal for West Ham at Manchester United at Old Trafford, that 1-0 that pretty much consigned Sheffield United to the drop. Where was the injustice there, you say? Well, we soon subsequently found out that Carlos and Javier Mascherano were not registered with West Ham.
Right.
They were registered through Kia Jarabshan, their agent. So it was totally illegal. And there was a whole court battle involving Sheffield United to try and get West Ham relegated. So we've come to this moment again, and Warnock in his post-match press conference was... I know he's very much a leave-means-leave Brexiteer, which...
Well, whatever.
No, but that's interesting. That seems like a, you know, a proper football man point of view. But he was very modern about his views on VAR.
No, I think it's... You know, it's... if anybody was in doubt before today, I think VAR has got to be the answer, hasn't it, to help them out? Because they need help, don't they, really? VAR would have sorted the goal out within seconds. Wouldn't have took more than 10 seconds to sort out. When somebody's, you know, as I've just said there, you know, we've worked on things for the last 3 weeks, and one of them's coming out at corner kicks and leaving a man in. And the lads have just said, what do we do now, Gaffer? What's the point? You've got to hope that linesman can see it.
So, it's interesting what he says. He does say that he wants VAR, but he also says later on, and kind of alludes to it there, that it was such an obvious offside that the linesman should have seen it.
Yeah.
He's on about Willian maybe blocking his view. I can't quite remember.
I don't know.
But there, like, you text me instantly saying what a disgraceful decision it was. It wasn't 6 inches. It was yards.
Well, and it's these moments, too, where, like, you really get the sense of what's at stake with not having VAR, when this could, like, this could send a team into relegation. Also, it's kind of double-barreled because... You don't know what it means for teams qualifying for Champions League, with Chelsea now being just a point back of third and fourth. It was funny, too, what Warnock, he said, he went on to say about his conversation with Sarri after the game.
He's lovely. He was moaning about a bloody throw-in or something. I said, Sarri, do you not know he's 2 yards offside? Bloody hell, you should be patting him on the back. Not complaining about a throw-in. He didn't realise he were offside.
He's great. He's in his 70s
when he wants
now.
To be. He's had moments where he's one of my least favorite guys in the league.
I love to hate him. He's fantastic. He really is. He's a dying breed. I'm not saying Neil Warnock. I'm just saying
the old school.
The old school manager. Like he's a guy who's.
Boy, it does hurt though from the clip before that you played, where he talks about how, like, that's a thing that we actually practice. Like, I can't even imagine
if you're
a manager and, like, you practice this and practice this and practice, and then in the biggest moment of your season, potentially, you break it out and you do it to perfection and it works, and then it's the referees who screw you by getting it wrong on their end. Like, those are the things where it's like, you know what, how can anyone blame a coach who just goes crazy on the sideline or after a game? Like, I get it, man. I totally get it.
His hands on the hip in the center circle, just staring at Craig Pawson.
We were all him. We were all him.
He reminded me of once when I was in home economics, and the teacher had snuck in behind me and my buddy, we were always given food on a Friday to cook things. And there was some kind of cookies involved in it, and we were just housing cookies. And she's behind us, and we turn around and there's like crumbs falling out of my mouth. And there she is, hands on hips.
Yeah.
Daggers. Very much Neil Warnock.
Yeah. And it's a shame, too, for Cardiff, because it almost felt like you almost felt like Chelsea fans didn't even feel like they deserved it. They're booing Sarri all game. They're chanting bleep Sarri ball.
Yeah.
You know, Chelsea can't really be in a position to be taking any matches for granted, let alone matches against teams battling relegation on their home ground. Like, that's a feisty opponent that you know you're going to be facing, who's in a corner battling for their lives. And he goes out there, doesn't start Hazard, doesn't start N'Golo Kanté. Like, and look, I'll give him... Chelsea fans are so upset that he's not starting Callum Hudson-Odoi. I would tend to agree with them.
Yeah.
Let's give this kid a shot. He's proving it whenever he gets the chance. But okay, I'll give you a pass on that one, maybe, if you're sorry. But, like, if Hazard, we're at a stage in the season now where you're fighting for top four in these games that mean so much. Like, what are you saving him for now? Like, this is it. He's probably leaving your club. All right? So, like, like what Joe Torre used to do for the Yankees. Oh, Scott Proctor, he's thrown every day for the last like 5 weeks. Yeah, I don't care. It's the eighth inning. He pitches the eighth inning. And the guy tore his arm off basically because Torre didn't care. I'm getting my use out of him. That's where you got to be with Eden Hazard now. You're not saving him for anything anymore. He's got to play if he's healthy.
Him. What are you doing? I absolutely agree. You're in the last. We're winding down Eden Hazard's career in Chelsea by benching him. It's just wild.
And then he comes on and it's just like instant impact. The turn from Hazard at like midfield, and then he goes on that long run.
I love watching him play. Yeah. Honestly, I really do. If there was any way to get him to come to Liverpool,
He's a guy where sometimes you wonder, certain players who go off to Real Madrid from the Premier League, and you're like, he's good, but is he going to play? I believe Hazard will go to Real Madrid and be awesome.
Oh, I think so.
I really think he's that good.
I think so. I think anywhere he goes, he'll be good. I really do. And he was, I mean, even in the World Cup, you just wanted to see him get on the ball. He was magical.
Yep. Any other games from over the weekend that you wanted to give a quick shout out to?
Yeah, there's grumblings down at the old London Stadium. Old Spursy Andy. I watched Everton play well, but I also had to ask myself, is this Everton playing well, or is this West Ham being really quite bad at the back? I think it's a little bit of both, but if I'm an Everton fan, I enjoyed that performance. They looked together, and there was joined up thinking in what they were doing. Remember we've been saying about Everton probably since the Derby game at Anfield. I'm not sure what this team is or what they're trying to do. And I even said, I don't know if they're that much better than their previous iteration under Koeman. Well, this was more of a joined up performance, and they look good.
Yeah, but in some ways, I almost feel like right now it's almost hard to judge anyone against West Ham with the way they're defending. We saw it in their previous game against Huddersfield. They win 4-3, but like you're giving up three goals to Huddersfield.
Can I ask you something? How can a team be that bad on set pieces when it's one of the areas of the game where you can really break down and work on? Like they were for the first goal, Andrew.
Kurt Zuma, just like...
For God's sake, like, it was shocking.
Yeah.
Absolutely shocking. And look, Pellegrini, again, nobody ever looks comfortable in that West Ham manager's job, and he certainly doesn't either. I suppose we should talk about Ole being at the wheel full-time, as they decided to announce that the day after we recorded. The day after.
It was like, I felt like it was like hours after.
We recorded last week. How dare they?
I know. So
Ole's at the wheel. Manchester United fans are ecstatic. Pundits are a little more circumspect. Our own Craig Burley's not 100% convinced. We saw that on ESPN FC.
And to us.
Yes.
When we spoke with him right before, he was still expressing the same sentiment.
Yeah, and you know, I can see his point of view on that one. Although, the Manchester United board were in a really tough position there. I think he was the only one they could really give the job to. And now he goes from 400 grand a year to 7 million a year. Which is incredible.
Look, he's done... I'm not going to change the way that I feel about this either. He's done everything right to get the job, but I still don't necessarily see why they felt the need to give it to him now. If Manchester United... I mean, look, who would you rather have? I don't know if this is on the table, but would you rather Solskjaer or Pochettino?
Oh, Pochettino for me.
All right, well, Real Madrid has filled their vacancy with Zidane. So, like, Manchester United would really potentially be competing with no one. If they wanted him bad enough.
Surely.
So, you know, and Pochettino has spurned big clubs before to remain with his big club, but like, if United wanted him bad enough and Tottenham end the season poorly or whatever, like, who knows how things could have played out? You just don't know.
I agree with you as well. And are they going to get a director of football in now to help him out? Because he's going to need it.
Yeah.
It changes now. It really does change. And this can't be short-termism. You're not giving it to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to, you know, just carry on doing what he's doing now. That's not what it's there for. It's to be better, to buy players in, and to build back towards being championship contenders again.
Yeah.
That's a whole different...
Both domestically and in Europe.
Yeah, suddenly your job...
That's what United's brand is.
Yeah, suddenly your job has gone from being caretaker of the mansion to living and owning the mansion.
Yeah.
That's a big jump.
And one other thing that I wanted to mention too... don't have much to say on it, but Leicester City defeat Bournemouth. Leicester City quietly have been very good of late, and I think if I'm them, priority one has to be to keep Yuri Tielemans there on a permanent move.
Sure. Because
since he's come over, he's been so good in his distribution. It feels like he has an assist every game. He's there right now on a temporary loan from Monaco. I feel like they have to...
a weird loan by Monaco.
But it's worked so well for Leicester, and I feel like that's just something that they have to solidify.
I agree with you, and that's the Brendan Rodgers effect.
Yeah, it sure is. I'll tell you what, we'll take a very quick break. When we come back, I feel like we've been teasing the mailbag for the last 2 weeks.
Mailbag.
We have such a backlog.
It's unbelievable. The bureaucracy to get through all this mailbag stuff. I will have to hire an assistant.
Wow. Oh. Can I just be that guy? We need an outside hire. It has to be outsourced.
Outsourced. We need full transparency.
Mailbag when we get back. Back now on Caught Offside. Mailbag in just a sec. But again, I want to remind people that Louis Miles, director of Kaiser, the greatest footballer never to play football, is coming up shortly as well. It's like we talked about at the start of the show, a fascinating look at a guy who conned his way into a football career. Pretty crazy.
Kind of like me. Or Darren Anderton.
Oh, wow.
That's not fair. He was injured. That's not the same thing, JJ.
No, he has scored goals of
huge repute.
Yeah.
Yes, I stop. Bold, JJ.
Let's see. Mailbag.
At your soccer pod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com, or check us out over on Insta, where we're fire and on fleek, as the children say. Caught Offside, we did a little poll. Might as well give you the poll results. Mm-hmm. Who won the Caught Offside Cup rap battle? 67% for Lil Gundy. A paltry 33% for DJ JJ. Some of the comments. Just finished this podcast, said Rita Rivas. Gundy surprises me. Loved his don't mess with me at the end, lol. Eddie Chaplin gives us another flavor. I expected this to be a lot cringier. JJ was good, but Andrew snapped. Got to save that Karius line and drop it in on the show. People love our drops.
Okay.
So I think that should be a drop.
Time to re-implement them.
Yes, I think so.
All right, maybe we'll grab some of the stuff from the raps.
Darnell Lee, this is an irritating email, but I feel like I need to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, fellas, please, 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 red card Harry Kane. Bruce Schoenfield's piece on ESPN.com was good. It is very good. But we don't need to hear a bleeped thing about Harry Kane talking about how he wants to play in the NFL. Pointless waste of time. Usain Bolt can't play pro soccer. LeBron James couldn't play NFL. And Harry Kane ain't no bleep NFL athlete. In fact, 99% of pro soccer players ain't. It takes a special breed to play that game. Am I saying he isn't a tough guy? Maybe, but just because he thinks he's a pro version of Tom Brady, he doesn't mean he can take what happens in the NFL. No flopping allowed, buddy. You get your teeth kicked in practice. I played that unforgiving game. Harry Kane needs to bend down and kiss the holy foosball every day.
Can I stop this
for one
this sec?
Yeah, this is such nonsense.
Does he not realize what it is that Harry Kane wants to do?
He's not the only one that's tweeted at us with this.
Does he think Harry Kane wants to play like left tackle?
He's going to play wide receiver.
He wants to be the kicker.
The kicker.
Was that real or is that like a parody?
No. Darnell just got, like a lot of people, half read something,
so Darnell
misinterpreted, and then blurted. And Darnell's a nice guy. He emails us regularly. Darnell, come on, man.
He's reading that thinking that Kane
thinking
wants
he's
to
going
put
to come
on
in and replace Gronk at tight end. He's not. He thinks he can kick. And you know what? He probably can.
He probably could. I mean, when he's done as a soccer player,
sure.
I don't want him to stop playing soccer. He happens to be really good at that.
In a nose tackle.
I thought that was a joke.
Harold Kane.
Wow.
Come on.
Darnell, we love you.
Darnell's a great guy. But he's not the only one to have done this. Read. Don't just get angry. Next one is, good question. Who was more angry, old Spursy Andy or old Grumpy Warnock? That's from Anthony S.
I would hope that Grumpy Warnock, his livelihood is at stake.
I think he's done all right. I think he'd be okay.
Yeah, but like...
His job is
potentially at stake. His team might get relegated. Like, he should be really, really mad on like an injustice like that.
I don't want to go back to Yorkshire without my job. Dylan Ahide, he notes that in Ajax the Dutch the War, Simon Cooper addresses saying Holland instead of the Netherlands.
Oh.
It's actually a note in the text. Strictly speaking, the word Holland only refers to the two western provinces of the Netherlands. In this book, I have often used it to mean the country as a whole. I have yet to meet a Dutch person who would be offended by this.
So it's something that that is just accepted.
It's just accepted.
Holland and the Netherlands are synonymous, yeah, even though the literal definition is not one and the same.
Correct. And, I mean, I've read Ajax the Dutch the War. I've never seen that note, but I believe that it's there. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's fine. Can we check in with the Amsterdam police and see what they'd say?
Hello there. It's me, Captain Stefan van der Hasgracht of the Amsterdam police again.
They didn't really have a
they didn't comment on it, no.
No, however, they... I meant to tell you, did you see who lost his job today?
No.
I think we are not just what you call underdogs.
Steve.
Oh, Steve's out of QPR.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
We have some QPR listeners, by the way.
Well, yeah. I'm sure they have some thoughts if they want to tweet them at CO Soccer Pod.
Kevin Cox sends an email entitled Kings of Smug. Now, people have been waiting for this email. Love the podcast. You guys are great, but you have now taken smug and hypocrisy to a new level on your last pod.
Oh, no.
It's not our last pod. It's 2 weeks ago. Blasting the bandwagon Leicester fan. Andrew, were you born in the north of London? JJ, were you born in Liverpool? You all would have room to talk if you were Brighton or Huddersfield fans. Everyone, including you smug jerks... chooses their team because of that team having some success. Once you stick with the team for a while, you are no more of a bandwagon fan than everyone else. I think we did make that point now. I demand that you give the listener a sincere apology. With love, Kevin.
I will say this. That is an incredible comeback to our smugness.
Oh, yeah.
I tip my cap to that. I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for you. Yes, there... Part of being a Tottenham fan for me is the fact that, yeah, they are a Premier League team. I didn't choose a side in the championship, and I chose a side that happens to be decent. In my own defense, when I did become a Tottenham fan, they were certainly not the Tottenham that we know them to be today. They've risen to that over the last several years. And part of my reasoning in wanting to be, like, Lasagnagate had happened, and I felt like that is such a, like, I could see the Eagles, like, the Philadelphia Eagles, like... It was kind of a moment of epic failure that helped, like, propel me into wanting to support that club. But it's a fair point. They are a very well-known side with a huge history, with a history of success. So if I am to be viewed as a bandwagon fan because of that, then you know what? You're right. I'm not going to fight them on that. And I apologize to the listener that we mocked for becoming a Leicester City fan during the second half of their title win.
Yeah, when I started becoming a Liverpool fan, the team to support was Manchester United. It certainly wasn't Liverpool. Liverpool were on the downward trajectory, and Man United, the jerseys were everywhere. It was prior to their first title win, so I don't know. Matt Silsby. I had to send an email in response to the concussion red card. Well done for raising the issue. I'm a neurologist who plays amateur soccer with a local club, so this is something that's frequently on my mind. I'm astounded that the IFAB didn't consider it a big enough issue to even discuss. There's growing evidence that repetitive concussive injury has long-term consequences. I don't think there should be any uncertainty with this. If someone is assessed by a doctor to be concussed, they have to come off. They shouldn't return to play until their symptoms have resolved, which might mean missing the next game. I think something like a free concussion substitute would be a great solution, i.e. doesn't count towards the three subs within the game. I am concerned that it's going to take some serious cultural change before that happens, though, unfortunately. Well, Matt sent that email well over a week ago in response to the Espen incident, and then on Saturday it happened again. Brain injury charity Headway has demanded a UEFA investigation after Newcastle defender Fabian Schär played on for Switzerland against Georgia on Saturday, despite being knocked unconscious in the first half. Mm-hmm. Dan in Columbus, who emailed us with his displeasure at our even mentioning poor attendance at Columbus Crew game, sent us another email, almost 900 words long, providing context, as he said himself. So thanks for that, Dan.
I got to say, even when our listeners are mad at us I still adore them. They're like, the fact that he did, like, sent an email
with
almost
links.
1,000 words and, like...
With links to podcasts.
So you're going to read it now?
No.
Oh.
No, I did. I did. I gave it a read. He makes some points, but, like, Dan just does not believe in, like, current commentary. Seeing something, talking about it. I think he doesn't realize how the news cycle works.
To follow up on that, Columbus played defending champion Atlanta over the weekend. Columbus won 2-0.
Yeah.
The attendance at MAPFRE Stadium, 10,000. against the defending champ.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about that, though. We have to give it a full...
Well, so without reading the whole thing, can you provide me... Because I mentioned when I said that about Columbus that part of it is... Has the ownership turnover not occurred yet and fans don't want to give any money to pre-court? Because if that's the case, look, if you want to stand on that principle, I understand it. But to me, like, it still doesn't look good for the players who are out there playing and like the enthusiasm that was supposed to be like overcoming the club, that you're going to stay in Columbus now. Like, let's get behind the team. I don't know. Is that really how all these people that are staying away, it's all because they don't want to give pre-court money?
Stop your trap from talking for 2 minutes? Dan is already typing a new email.
Is that what he says, though?
Basically, his thing is, if I can remember it, there was so much in it. Part of it was that the handover hasn't really crystallized yet. It's not 100%. So the new ownership hasn't had a chance to make their mark on it. And there's a lot of legacy issues to deal with. That's it in a nutshell.
Well, I'm curious when the handover does occur, and hopefully there's an uptick in support.
Well, it has, but they've got
support.
The cogs haven't fully turned yet. We need to give it more time. That's the genesis of what
you respond
saying.
To Dan? Or I would like him, honestly, I'm not being smug. Honestly, I would like him to keep us posted.
Abreast.
Be our fan correspondent for Columbus and like let us know what is happening, why... Like, when is the handover official?
Can he let us know in less than 400 words? Colton Bailey. Good one here. My message for Mailbag is a story of a partnership between Barcelona and Ajax. How do you guys feel about this? Seems to be mutually beneficial, though slightly tilted in favor of Barcelona. Not slightly tilted. Do you think this sets a dangerous precedent? Would love to get some feedback. Well, this is from, and this is the only place I've seen it, the Spanish newspaper Sport. Had this story. The Spanish giants see Ajax as the perfect place for their young players or recent recruits from South America to learn their trade before breaking into their first team. Barcelona would want in return first refusal on any of the best young talents or players at Ajax. So basically, Barcelona can farm out the guys that aren't getting a game at the Nou Camp to Ajax, but Ajax have to give Barcelona first refusal on some of their up-and-coming players. I don't like it at all. I don't believe in it. I know there is a lot of crossover between the two clubs from the Johan Cruyff era, from even with players like, you know, let me think who's better. I mean, they've had so many players. Look at Mark Overmars, who's currently director of football at Ajax. He played at both Barcelona and Ajax, and there's the Cruyff link. There's tons of players that have kind of forged this link. But that to me, it doesn't smell right. I don't like it.
So this is not without precedent. Only about 5 or 6 years ago, Tottenham and Real Madrid had one of these quote-unquote special relationships.
Mm.
And then Real Madrid came in and bullied Tottenham for Modric and then did the same thing the very next year for Gareth Bale. And then Tottenham promptly ended this special relationship. In the partnership agreement, it said that the two clubs will be working together in respect of players, coaching, best practices, commercial relationships. It was all nonsense. Tottenham got nothing out of it, and Real Madrid took two of the best Tottenham players in the last 30 years. It was a very one-sided relationship.
I don't like this. The power is clearly rests in Barcelona on
of
this
course.
One. I don't like it at all.
No, me neither.
I want to see Ajax be a superpower again.
Yeah.
Why can't they are right now? Why would you do that?
Oh, superpower is like
that's probably a bit strong, but they're an excellent team.
Yes.
So why wouldn't you just want to foster that? Keep going. Do not sign this. By the way, I have only seen it reported in one place, but it's been talked about in a lot of different areas of the media, and that is the Mailbag.
Well, there you go. That was good. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. What's the Instagram again?
Caught Offside ESPN.
That one. I did the last thing on the rap battle that I wanted to mention was that people did go into it with like the ultimate in low expectations. I think a lot of people thought that it was going to be so bad that it'd be good.
Yeah.
Not all that dissimilar from
PPL, back for more.
But
you
I think
teasing people with that.
Being totally honest, I think people were actually a little bit surprised that we, you and I, both actually put out like raps that weren't total embarrassments.
Yeah, but we do listen to rap music.
Yeah, but that doesn't, you know, I watch football. Like,
I know, but we have a basic idea of the core tenets and core beliefs of rap. One other thing from the weekend, watching so much Brexit stuff, I've found a new way for us when we get into heated arguments to sort out our problems, like the Speaker of the House, John Bercow.
Oh, dear! Order!
That's a good idea.
That is some wild stuff over there. So I'm just going to get... Berko is going to sit there from now on.
With a gavel and a...
Gavel and...
Is he wearing the wig?
No, he doesn't do the wig. Betty Boothroyd, former Speaker of the House, she used to go full wig.
Can we do the wigs?
Order!
With Hims, we won't need a wig.
That's right, JJ. I want to tell you about Hims. That was shockingly professional.
Total pro.
66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Can you believe it? I turned 35 in a month.
You are just a breath of a boy, though. Right. Your skin with that. Do you moisturize?
No.
That shocks me.
Really?
You've got good skin.
I didn't when I was younger. I had acne.
I moisturize so much.
The thing is, JJ, that when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have rather than replace the hair you lost. So how will you feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? Well, I ask you this. Do you want a bald spot to pop up, or do you want to do something about it? Do you want your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? Well, here we go. 4hims.com. That is your one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills, no gas station supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room visits. No awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. It's so easy. Just answer a few quick questions, and a doctor will review and prescribe for you. Products are shipped directly to your door. So here's how you do all of this. You can order right now because listeners of this podcast get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. Restrictions do apply. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy, but we're telling you, go to 4hims.com/offside. That's forhims.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside. All right, JJ, here we go. We talked about this earlier in the podcast. It's something that was very passionate to you that I had not seen really much before. And then you told me that this actually debuts here in the United States today.
Yes, the story of Kaiser, the greatest footballer never to actually play many minutes or any minutes at all. 20 years in the Brazilian top flight and somehow probably the greatest con man I've ever seen on film or read about.
Yeah, and the documentary, like I said, launches here in the United States today. And the director, Louis Miles, is kind enough to join us right now. Louis, what's up, man? How are you?
Yeah, hey, guys. Nice to meet you. I'm good.
Yeah, I guess the natural place to start is, how did this project come your way?
Sure. So I've been working in soccer over here in the UK for quite some time, and I'd been doing some work for a computer game called Football Manager, and their business director came to me and said, hey, have you heard this story about this guy who had... 26-year career playing football in Brazil, but never kicked a ball. And he'd do anything to get a contract and then anything not to get on the pitch to show that he was terrible at football. I was like, no, that's incredible. Because it was a true story. We want to make a movie about it. Do you want to come and do it? And I was like, yeah, of course I do. And I knew Tim Vickery, who's like a football correspondent in South America, does a lot of work over here for BBC Five Live and, you know, quite well known. And I'd known him for years, and he said, oh, you know what, in 21 years of living in Rio, that's not just the best football story I've ever heard, but the best story I've ever heard. Someone should make a movie about it. So we thought, right, let's go and make this. And we sort of got a bit of seed funding together, jumped on a plane over to Rio de Janeiro and tried to find the guy and found him. And then it was just a mad 2.5-year journey trying to find out the truth of what happened and meeting everyone from mafia bosses to soccer legends, you know, like Carlos Alberto Torres, the captain of the 1970 World Cup squad, Bebeto, Zico, all of these absolute legends of football, all of whom knew Kaiser and all of whom had a story to tell about him. And we just uncovered this incredible story. Huh?
Louis, how willing was Kaiser to talk about his life, considering it had been such a large charade?
Well, I think he wanted to. So, for most of the time in football, he obviously never wanted to let on that he couldn't play football and it was all a bit of a con. But then, you know, fake footballers, they have to retire, you know. and actually, you know, like, I mean, Rio is like one of the best cities I've ever been to in the world. It's so beautiful, but it's quite hard to live if you've not got that much money. And Kaiser never really did any of this for the money. He did it for the status and the lifestyle. So he became one of the most, well, not one of the most famous footballers in Brazil, but he became a celebrity. You know, he became like the man about town. He could go and eat in any restaurants for free. He could appear on TV shows. He could stay at his famous friends' houses and like look after their place. And he had a nice life of it. But, you know, later on in life, he sort of had to go to work, and I don't think he liked it very much. So he started telling the story of, you know, how he managed to con people. So he started doing that in about 2010. Very quickly, it went all over the Brazilian press. He appeared on like the biggest talk show in South America and sort of had a reversioning of his life. And then when we came along, he was like, right, now we can make this into a movie. So he was really happy to tell us. Whether he wanted us to tell the truth or not, I don't think so. But look, it was amazing.
The thing that I'm most curious about, so like you say, he was not any good, but he continued to wind up on some of Brazil's bigger clubs. So yeah, it seems hard for me to believe that this one guy did this on his own. I mean, were there other people kind of in on the con with him?
Yeah, so look, I mean, I think the point about this story, and we've been doing interviews, we debuted at Tribeca last year in 2018. And we've been doing loads of interviews since then. And I think everyone has the same question, is like how and why, and surely people would know, and like, or maybe people would help. And I think the thing is that look, he found an in to the football world, and became friends with genuinely really good friends with some of the biggest names in Brazilian football. His best friend is a guy called Renato Gaúcho, who manages Grêmio. And they won the Copa Libertadores a couple of years ago. He's tipped to become the next Brazilian national team manager, Renato. So he's a really big figure in football. And these guys would vouch for him, because basically you're talking about the 80s and 90s where, you know, things were a little bit more easygoing. They didn't necessarily have the scouting that goes on these days. And he would come to a club, ace a test, you know, he was very fit, he would clear all of that, and he would do enough to get the short-term contract, and then once he was in the club, he would start to supply people with what they wanted. So whether that was nights out, whether that was women, whether that was something a little bit more you know, shall we say illegal, he would do that. And he would also take the blame for players. He would clean up, he would just sort everyone, make sure everyone was all right. And so people wanted him around. And then after a while, he became like the biggest sort of fixer in football, I guess, really. He became everything. So a lot of these clubs in Rio at the time were, I think, three out of the four major clubs were run by gangster bosses. And he was best friends with all of them. So once you got the chairman on side, who, you know, basically runs the country through their illegal crime enterprise, he was kind of fine, you know. And then people would, you know, after a while, people would call on him to help out. I mean, he was at Vasco da Gama, and we sort of hinted it in the film, but we don't put it on record because out of respect for the player that they're talking about. But there was a Brazilian national team forward who was suffering from alcoholism, and they brought Kaiser in to make sure he was all right. So he became an official Vasco player to, you know, make sure that their star player played really well. So it's a little bit deeper than perhaps him trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. But he definitely had people helping him, for sure.
Louis, he spoke of with such warmth by some of the superstars of Brazilian football in the movie. Was that surprising to you, considering the way Brazilians treat football as this almost wonderful, sacred, ethereal passion of theirs, that somebody could come in with this kind of bluster and fake his way through such a lengthy career? Were you surprised that he wasn't treated with more disdain?
So, here, the mad thing is here, right, is that Kaiser, a lot of people did the interviews because Kaiser had something on them. So, you know, we really struggled to get Romario.
Right.
And eventually he agreed, but then he got really ill, unfortunately, so we couldn't do it. But look, Romario is a senator in the Brazilian government, and the backdrop of all this is the political one of the political crises recently in Brazil, but the Romário is one of the key votes on it. And look, there's a newspaper article that went out in the Brazilian press. It's out there for people to want to have a look at it, where Romário's Porsche is all smashed up. And it says Romario went to a party and had a big night out, and he got his friend to drive, and unfortunately it was a bit of a smash up, and really, really bad. But look, you know, the guy in the background of the picture is Kaiser. And Kaiser can't drive, you know. Kaiser's blind in one eye, he can't do it. So, you know, Kaiser's there for a reason, right? So everyone, you know, Kaiser had something on everyone, whether it was good or bad or whatever. Most people, it was to do with their lives when they were 20-odd, you know, their younger days, and they didn't want their wives finding out what they got up to. But that doesn't need to say that they, when you get to interview them, that they didn't have this warmth. You're right. If you look at Bebeto, look, Kaiser turned up halfway through that interview, and that was supposed to be a 20-minute interview. It went on for 3.5 hours. And Bebeto was nearly crying when Kaiser turned up. He hadn't seen him for a couple of years, and he absolutely loves the man. And he associates it with some of the best times of his life. They loved having him around. So, look, yeah, he had stuff on people, but he also, I think he kind of was like a bit of a glue in the dressing room, you know, this guy that they're all in the joke. They knew he was terrible and it was fine. It's that kind of like easygoing Rio lifestyle. He was the guy that bought the party. That's who they wanted around.
Louis Miles, director of Kaiser, the greatest footballer never to play football, joining us here on Caught Offside. Louis, I was reading a little bit about it in the lead up to this interview, and I'm wondering if you could share maybe a couple of the examples or the methods that Kaiser would go to avoid actually having to play football.
Okay, so, I mean, it's actually one we didn't necessarily put in the film, this, but it's an absolutely brilliant one whereby Kaiser would used to always, this is the day before mobile phones were really, really a thing, you know, they were big brick things, you know. And Kaiser always used to say that he had contracts abroad and he was back on loan from a club, and he'd be in Ajaccio in France or be at Independiente in Argentina. And he always used to have a mobile phone that he used to speak to, and he used to speak foreign languages. And they were out one night in the Copacabana with a guy called Moises. No, it wasn't Moises. I can't remember now. One of the physiotherapists was out with them, and he was kind of speaking half French, half English on the phone. And he was, and this guy had played in England. He was thinking, this doesn't sound right at all. And he went up to him and he picked up the phone. And Kaiser would always be using this to have a conversation about a new contract or create some sort of diversion where he's like, oh, I'm just sorting out this, my contract situation over in France or in England or whatever. Anyway, this guy was on a night out, and he's just saying, look, this doesn't sound like English. And he went over to Kaiser's, picked up the phone off Kaiser, and it was a toy mobile phone, and he'd never had any contract negotiations at all. Another one which is featured heavily in the film, and this one we did, you know, did a lot of research into, was he was playing for a club called Bangle in the west zone of Rio, and Bangle was run by a guy called Castor de Andrade, who was kind of the main mafia boss in Brazil in the 80s. You know, when he got arrested, it turned out that half of Rio was on his payroll, including the president of Brazil. So a really serious man. And he had taken Bangu from a tiny, tiny club into being a penalty kick away from winning the Brazilian championship. Anyway, Kaiser had been there on and off. And one night, Castor wanted Kaiser to play in the game coming up the next day. He'd been training and been on pay. And he was like, no, Kaiser needs to play. And they tracked him down in a nightclub in Rio, ordered him to come to the game against Curitiba the next day. Kaiser's obviously saying, oh, look, I'm injured. He always used to fake injury. So he would always be super fit, but then pull up at the last minute. And because there was no MRIs, they couldn't prove whether he had a muscle injury or not. Anyway, the coach Moises says, look, you have to go on the bench. He goes on the bench. They go 2-0 down, and he thinks, oh, no, this is really bad. Castor gets on the walkie-talkie, orders him onto the pitch, so he's got no choice now, the manager. So Kaiser starts warming up on the sidelines. And what happens is that Kaiser concocts this story whereby the fans were abusing him, whether they were or not, I don't know. And so he just jumps over the fence and starts a fight with the fans and gets himself sent off before coming onto the pitch.
Brilliant.
And then... so that therefore he doesn't have to show that he can't play football. He doesn't have to expose his com. After the game, Castor de Andrade comes down. Everyone's obviously very scared of him because, you know, like, this is quite serious stuff. Mafia, you know, you don't want to cross these guys. You know what happens, right? And Kaiser takes it one step further. He thinks on his feet and just says, look, Castor, you're my father. God's taken away my father and you're like a second father to me. And, you know, look, just before you, I know you're very upset, but just before you start, you know, look, those fans were saying that you'd killed this person, that you're a drug baron. And I couldn't take that, you know, like, I don't know what the truth is or not, but they can't criticize you in your own stadium. So I had to defend your honor. And, Castor loved it and extended his contract rather than sacking him. So he would always think like that. It really is like Catch Me If You Can, you know, it's a bit like, that character, I don't know, named Frank Abagnale Jr. You know, it's all these really simple cons on the day that made you think they'd get over a situation, and people went for it, you know, and they loved him.
Louis, before we let you go, what is Kaiser doing now? What does a fake retired player do with his time, and what state is his life in?
So, Kaiser. Now, I mean, for a man who, I mean, a lot of this was, you know, takes place in a highly sexualized Rio de Janeiro of the 80s and 90s, where it's, you know, love was very free over there, especially in those times. And, you know, he used to sort out a lot of women, and he had a lot of girlfriends, you know. So it's only apt that he's now a personal trainer that only trains female bodybuilders. in Rio. So that's kind of his day to day. He's had a bit of a second life since, I mean, we were an independent film. We as I said, we launched last year. We had loads of press around it. And you know, he's back on Brazilian TV. So I noticed he had an hour special on Fox Sports in Brazil the other day. Yeah, he's back on there. I mean, look, this is a guy that, you know, even during his prime, he'd appear as an analyst or a pundit on football highlights programs, soccer highlights programs, giving instructions about how players could do better or how they could score a goal. You know, so he couldn't play football, so he's back doing that. He's back being a legend of football that appears on the same shows as, you know, Ronaldo and Ronaldinho and Zico. So it's kind of crazy, really.
Yeah. Last one, I guess, for listeners to our podcast, where is this able to be seen here in the US?
So we're now in the US. We're on Amazon Prime. If you search out Kaiser, the greatest footballer never to play football, it's there. I hope you really, really enjoy it. It's been an absolutely mad sort of 3-year journey to get it together. And look, it's a different football story, you know, guys. It's not like a documentary where you look at it and you go, oh wow, look at all this amazing archive. It's real kind of storytelling, and look, it's kind of one of the most unbelievable stories I've ever come across, which is, I guess, why we made the film. So, Amazon Prime, available now.
It certainly is. I can highly recommend it. Thanks very much for your time, Louis.
Thanks.
Our thanks there to Louis Miles. What a cool feature that sounds like it's going to be.
Yeah, he sent me a screener a few months ago. Absolutely brilliant. So good. Yeah. And one of those rare football stories.
The one thing that I just like can't get over. So let's say if I wound up, I can't play soccer. Let's say I wound up on a team though tomorrow, and through whatever different events, like I wound up having to go in.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my God, you'd stand out.
Well, but like, here's the thing. If you want to, soccer is one of those sports where you can hide. Like
you definitely can.
In baseball, you can't hide. Like if a ball gets hit to you, you have no choice. Like
right.
If when you're up at bat, it's you versus the pitcher. In soccer, like you can stay near a defender if you want. So like you can't. So you know you're not going to really get the ball. And if you do, and a defender takes it right off you, it makes sense. Like. There's just stuff like you could hide. Like in basketball, if you really want to, you can kind of stand in the
corner. But there's a look, Andrew. There's a look.
But like this guy presumably has played enough soccer that like when he went on these trials,
he could get by.
Yeah. So you're saying he couldn't even get on the field and hide a little bit and go off of like whatever minimal ability he might have had? Like he had to resort to jumping into the stands and fighting a fan that may have not even said anything to him at all. Like that was a better option?
There is a look a player has, especially, and like it's not just coming into a game in the park, it's coming into the highest level of Brazilian football, and you know the way they look, their first touch is just
right,
even the way they run.
Look, I get it, he would suck, there's no question about it.
There's a great BBC documentary, I'll have to dig it out, I can never find it, it's from around 2000, where an Italian, an actual like con man. This guy made up fake letters that he was on trial at Sheffield Wednesday and Rangers. He ended up in the Northern Irish League at a couple of different clubs. I think Coleraine was one of them. And he ended up at a couple of different Welsh League clubs. He defrauded these people of thousands, these clubs of thousands. And they used to say, the minute he come on the field, they'd know in training.
What's this guy doing?
But he had this Italian name, and it was really, Google was only just beginning to emerge, and the due diligence was not done.
It was Samuel Allardyce.
But this guy was a serious con man. And but the pros, even at that level, Irish League level, they could see, this guy's a chancer.
Hack. Well, there you go. Our thanks to Louis Miles, and our thanks to all of you for tuning in today and listening to Caught Offside. We're going to be back midweek. Whether it's Wednesday or Thursday, I think, is still TBD, but we will have a podcast for you because there is a lot of midweek action.
There is indeed.
And like I said, I do promise that we'll do our MLS Jump to Conclusions week as well.
Oh, we should. Oh, that's fun. No, we should do that.
Yeah. Hey, good stuff, my friend. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Enjoy your croissant.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.